Happy hump day, film nuts all over the movie planet. I'm Joe Sarah, and you are listening to the Movie Planet Retro Review Show. Today, we will be revisiting and reviewing Disney's Hercules. Now, the idea behind this show is that we're going to be going back 20 years or more, depending on the day of the show, and we'll choose a movie that came out on that day in history that should be essential viewing for everyone. Now, the movies that came out today, June 13th, that are 20 years old or more, are Back to School with Rodney Dangerfield, Hercules by Disney in 1997, and You Only Live Twice, which was a James Bond movie. Now, I had to kick out the Bond one because I don't want to get into Bond yet. Bond takes a little bit of while to get into. I kind of want to start with Dr. No before we do anything there. And with Back to School, although it's a really good classic comedy, it does not hold up very well. Hercules is actually a better film to do on this. So I'm going to say that Hercules is the best first option of these movies that everyone should see. But first, if you want to get a hold of me, you can email me at movieplanetpodcast@gmail.com. We're also on Facebook @movieplanetpod. We're on Twitter @movieplanetpod and Instagram @movieplanetpodcast. Now, on this show, we will be keeping track of all the movies worth your time in our Movie Planet Preserve. This is a continuation of what we did on a previous podcast called The Movie Playground, where movies are compared to others in their genre. The animated movie Planet Preserve is comprised of 7 and only 7 films. Currently, there are 4 films in the animated movie Planet Preserve, so we're going to see what kind of film we fill this with. Number 1 in that preserve is Toy Story 3, which got a perfect score. Toy Story 2 also got a perfect score. Toy Story came in 3rd place with a 3 out of 4, and Fantastic Mr. Fox also at number 4 with a 3 out of 4. Now, the higher the grade we give it, the longer it may be staying there. Only a film with a higher grade can kick it out on its rear end from the Pantheon in the future. So we will discuss this movie, and in an hour or so, we will analyze it and grade it and figure out if there's a movie that, you know, we need to kick out. But luckily, because there's only 4 in there, we're not going to be kicking out anything. This is a spoiler-rich podcast, so if you haven't seen Hercules, it's best if you stop right here, watch the movie, and then turn me back on to enjoy the discussion and analysis. And I'm going to show you a few Easter eggs that are in here that you should probably pay attention to. But now that we've handled that business, let's get down to business.
Almighty Zeus, please, hear me and answer my prayer.
Hercules.
How do you become a true hero?
Look inside your heart.
Walt Disney Pictures presents...
Gladiator.
Hercules. Stronger than 10 men. And having a devil of a time.
Name is Hades, Lord of the Dead. I hate him.
Trying to prove himself.
Get ready to rumble!
My favorite part of the game. Sudden death.
This summer.
Come on!
Take off on an epic new adventure.
I'm right behind you, kid! I'm way behind you, kid!
Featuring a monster cast.
Guys? Olympus would be that way.
A hotshot villain.
I've got 24 hours to get rid of this bozo. And you are wearing his merchandise!
And one true hero.
The only hero! Major Hunter! The only hero! And who to stop?
Get them!
It's the man.
Hercules!
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 The myth.
I'm an action figure!
The movie.
And hey, 2 thumbs way, way up.
Hercules.
Well, well. It's a small underworld after all, huh?
Well, this week I'm talking about 1997's Hercules, a rated G movie directed by Ron Clements and John Musker. The movie was made for $85 million, and it brought in $252.7 million worldwide. It's starring Tate Donovan as Hercules, Danny DeVito as Philoctetes, James Woods as Hades, Susan Egan as Megara, Frank Welker as Pegasus, Rip Torn as Zeus, Samantha Egger as Hera, Bobcat Goldthwait as Pain, Matt Frewer as Panic, Paul Schaefer as Hermes, and Charlton Heston, the head of the NRA, as the opening narrator. According to the top critics at Rotten Tomatoes, it has a tomato meter reading of 80%, 12 fresh reviews, 3 rotten. The critics on average gave this film a 6.9 out of 10. It's almost a 7 out of 10. The audience score, which is the average rating the audience gave this film, is a 3.3 out of 5, with 75% agreeing that it's a 3 or higher. And the consensus reads, fast-paced and packed with dozens of pop culture references, Hercules might not measure up with the true classics of the Disney pantheon, but it's still plenty of fun. But first, let's get into the making of this movie.
Don't get on the set, get ready to shoot, and then ask for rewrites. Studios do this crap all the time, and they wonder why they end up with a shit movie.
Smoke and mirrors, guys. Welcome to the movie factory.
Movie? You know, I hate the word movie. I don't make movies. I make films.
So this whole thing started back in early 1992. Disney brings in around 30 artists, writers, and animators to pitch ideas for potential animated features. Each is given just 2 minutes per pitch, and the first pitch was for an adaptation of The Odyssey. Cute idea, but it's probably going to go a little long, and the idea really had no central characters, so that was scrapped.
He chose poorly.
Animator Joe Haydar suggested perhaps Hercules could be good for the big screen, and his idea was that it would be set during the Trojan War, where both sides are trying to get Hercules to be kind of their secret weapon. They continued to bounce ideas back and forth about this until they came up with a page and a half outline. But Haydar did not go any further with the project. It kind of gets pushed away to the side. Now we fast forward to November of 1992. The directors of Aladdin, Ron Clements and John Musker, start redeveloping plans for the 2002 movie Treasure Planet. Jeffrey Katzenberg, who was the chairman at Disney, wasn't feeling Treasure Planet, but promised he would greenlight the movie if they could find another movie beforehand to make a little cash. Some of the ideas were Don Quixote, The Odyssey again, and Around the World in 80 Days. These were all pitched until somebody just opened up a desk drawer and found out about this Hercules outline. John Musker is quoted as saying, quote, "We thought it would be our opportunity to do a superhero movie." And the studio liked the idea, and Hercules got greenlit.
You have chosen wisely.
Now, anytime there's a movie that has inconsistencies between the fact and fiction, you always get the trolls who want to use that to discount a movie. So, let's get some of these gripes out of the way so we can enjoy this movie. There are many differences between the film and the original myths. Among them are, number one, Hera wasn't actually Hercules' mother. While Zeus was his father, his mom was a mortal named Alcmene, which made him a demigod. Hercules was conceived when Zeus disguised himself as Alcmene's husband Amphitryon, who was away to fight in a war. That old devil. Zeus's wife Hera, furious over her husband's adultery, swore vengeance and bestowed misfortune over Hercules wherever and whenever she could. In the movie, Alcmene and her husband Amphitryon adopt baby Hercules. So they use the same characters, they just put a little Disney spin on it. The number two inconsistency, the fates that you see, those old women that share the eye, yeah, they don't actually share an eye in the real myths. It's the Grey who actually share an eye, and their whole thing is they help Perseus find Medusa. So that's a pretty cool little story. Disney should do Medusa's story. I think that'd be a lot of fun. Number three, Pegasus was created by the blood of Medusa, not a bunch of clouds as seen in the film on Olympus, although I like the cloud thing. It does make it seem a little more cartoony, if you will. Number four, Zeus did not bestow the underworld on Hades. Zeus, Hades, and Poseidon, they all drew lots. They basically just, you know, drew straws. It was like, okay, what do you have the short straw? Okay, Hades, you're going down to the underworld. Number five, in the movie, Hades releases the Titans from a place at the bottom of the ocean. But in the original myth, they were banished to Tartarus, which is in the deepest and worst section of the underworld. The number six inconsistency, the Cyclops. Although brother to the Titans, was not a Titan. The Cyclops was not a Titan. He was just a brother of them. Number seven, the Titans say Zeus put them there. But it was actually Zeus's grandfather, Uranus, that did that. Zeus freed the Cyclops along with the giants and creatures called Hundred-Handed Ones, and he was given the gift of thunder and lightning as a token of appreciation. The number eight inconsistency, Narcissus. is not a Greek god, and therefore he would not be on Mount Olympus. Although many would claim that he probably thought that he should, because he's a narcissist. And finally, number 9, Megara was Hercules' first wife with whom he had children. However, Hera induced a fit of rage and madness in him, during which he killed them all. To repent for these sins, Hercules performed all of his heroic deeds. Most of them are seen, mentioned, or referred to in this movie. It is his later wife, Deianira, who Hercules saves from the river guardian Nessus. In revenge, Nessus gives Deianira a poisonous shirt, saying it'll make Hercules love her more. Unsuspecting, she later gives him the shirt, believing his love for her is waning. The shirt clings to Hercules' skin and causes him agonizing pains. He builds a funeral pyre and sits on top of it, begging his friends to set it on fire and end his misery. No one can bring themselves to do it except for Philoctetes, who was a man, not a satyr, as seen in the movie. Upon death, Zeus deifies Hercules and admits him onto Olympus. So these are all the little inconsistencies that people have with this movie, and they are things that you can nitpick and get angry with. But again, when you go to see a movie, you go to see a story. If it's based on a true story, that usually means, in my eyes, that about 25 to 50% of it is actually true. The rest of it's going to be all entertainment.
It's a trap!
Yes, it is. It's very much a trap. But let's get started walking through this movie. This is based on the legend of Hercules and Heracles. Now, the Spice Girls, yes, those Spice Girls were originally approached to portray the Muses following an invitation to sing one of the songs, but declined the offer due to scheduling conflicts. Thank God. The Muses that you see in here that sing throughout the entire thing are fantastic. They really did a good job of bringing a gospel feel to a spiritual movie. Now, we go to Mount Olympus. Zeus and his wife are celebrating the birth of their son, Hercules. The lord of the underworld, Hades, is also invited, though is not at all pleased with the birth of Hercules. Now, in mythology, Heracles, the Greek name of Hercules, is the son of Zeus. Zeus is the brother of Poseidon. Poseidon has a son named Triton. In The Little Mermaid, one of Triton's children is Ariel, making Hercules and Ariel Disney's first cousins once removed. Yay, Disney! You've created a universe to play in. We return to the underworld. Hades meets up with Pain and Panic, and then with the three fates, who tell Hades that in 18 years, when the planets align, if he unleashes the Titans, who were imprisoned by Zeus, he will defeat Zeus and rule over all. However, there is a possibility that Hercules could stop him. So, what does Hades do? Hades grabs his minions, Pain and Panic, to turn Hercules mortal and kill him. They got a little potion. The two kidnap little baby Hercules and take him to Earth. Hercules drinks almost every single drop of this potion except one. When a childless couple disturbs the two minions' plan, the two decide to tell Hades that they killed Hercules, but figure leaving him on Earth as a mortal will keep him from interfering in Hades' eventual plot. Now we get another song, the gospel truth that ties this timeline together. However, not being completely mortal, Hercules is ostracized from the rest of society by his immense strength and clumsiness. Really, it's more his clumsiness. He is a hot mess everywhere that this kid goes. These are like the puberty years. You know, he thinks he's stronger. He's drawn really funny too. He's drawn like a baby Labrador, where he's got like big feet, big hands, and tiny limbs. But he's super strong. He just doesn't know his own strength. And everybody just looks at him like he's a freak. As he approaches his teenage years, his father tells of him, of how they found him with a medallion bearing the symbol of the gods. Hercules sets off for the temple of Zeus to find answers. And once inside the temple, the enormous statue of Zeus comes to life, first scaring Hercules, but then explaining how he is the young boy's father. You can only imagine how freaked out Hercules would be, knowing that, one, this statue just came to life, and two, this gigantic thing is your father. Wow, didn't see that one coming. Zeus then explains that if Hercules can become a true hero, he'll be able to return to Mount Olympus and rejoin them. Zeus then provides Hercules with a winged horse named Pegasus and sends them off to find Philoctetes. Now, again, he got Pegasus when he was a baby. Zeus made Pegasus when he was a kid out of some clouds, a little Cirrus, a little blah, 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 blah. And so this is the first time that Hercules and Pegasus are kind of seen together. They bang heads, they smile, they hug, all that stuff. And now, you know, Hercules has seen a couple of strange things. He's seen a statue come to life, and he's seen Pegasus kind of start flying out of the sky. Hercules and Pegasus find Philoctetes, who is nicknamed Phil, just to make it easier on anybody that wants to know what is going on in this movie. He's on a deserted island. Having become a grouchy old satyr, Phil is at first reluctant, but finally relents. And another song comes along. This time it's I'm Down to One Last Hope, and it's You. And this is actually a really good song. I like this. I like the fact that Danny DeVito sings this because Danny DeVito has a very distinct voice. And for the satyr that they had, you needed somebody who sounded a little gruff, a little bit rough around the edges. And Danny DeVito is the right name for that part right there. So we watch a montage of him training. And after an intense period of training, Hercules grows from a scrawny little teenager to a buff young man. At Hercules' insistence to try what he has learned, Phil, Hercules, and Pegasus head for the city of Thebes, which is plagued by a number of disasters and problems.
You tell them I'm coming, and hell's coming with me, you hear?
On the way there, they are sidetracked by Meg, who appears to be menaced by a centaur. Hercules grows somewhat enchanted with her before Phil gets them back on track to Thebes. Now, this is a fun little thing. This centaur is kind of bugging this lady, and this is the first female that we're really seeing outside of Alcmene at the very beginning, and, of course, all the Greek goddesses at the beginning. This is the first interaction for this kid, and he's going to see kind of a cute little girl in Meg. And Meg is sassy as hell. Like, she got an attitude that just, it's 100% all the time. She couldn't be bothered. She can handle her own business. This may be the first truly independent woman in Disney animation. And yet everybody forgets about this lady. She can handle herself. So after they leave, Meg meets with Hades and his assistants Pain and Panic. Meg was actually trying to get the centaur to side with Hades, but claims Hercules spoiled her plans. Upon hearing this, Hades angrily grabs his assistants, realizing they have lied to him. Pain and Panic manage to convince Hades that since Hercules is mortal, hey, they can still kill him, as Bobcat Goldthwait would say. We return back to Thebes. Hercules tries to convince the citizens that he is a hero. He's the hero that they've all been looking for, but no one is willing to believe him. All of a sudden, who shows up? It's Meg again, and she's looking cute again, and she's batting those little eyes, and she appears and she tells of two small boys trapped under a rock in a nearby canyon. So Hercules goes running over to save the little boys, and this is kind of funny because in the scene where these two kids are trapped under the boulder, they say, "Someone call IXII!" And they're pronounced as letters, but this is actually a reference to the Roman numerals IX, I, and I, or 911. The emergency phone number in the United States. Kind of strange that in Greece, they understand phones in that. Yeah. So, yeah, I haven't seen a phone in this movie yet. It's a fun little line to have. I thought it was completely useless. There's a lot of pop culture references in this that don't make a whole lot of sense, but you just got to kind of go with and go, oh, that's just a funny joke for the moment. So Hercules saves the little boys. He saves them, but he finds out, ha-ha, it's actually Pain and Panic in disguise. But then he has to contend with the three-headed beast called the Hydra. And after finding out that cutting off one head produces three more, Hercules ends up crushing the beast with a rock slide. The defeat of the Hydra causes the citizens of Thebes to acknowledge Hercules as a hero and further anger Hades. This is interesting because this movie is all hand-drawn animation except for this Hydra piece. The Hydra is rendered in computer-generated images, unlike the rest of the movie, which is hand-drawn. This was done as it would have been incredibly difficult to draw each head individually. So it makes you wonder, what were the animators up against the wall with on this one? Disney's usually given a lot of time to finish these movies. Why do they feel like they didn't have time to do the Hydra? I don't know. The Hydra kind of sticks out, but I'll be honest with you, I like it. I like the way this looks. So I got to give it a thumbs up on that one because it is pretty good CGI, and it's a good mix of the CGI with a hand-drawn Hercules. Hades continues to send beasts and creatures against Hercules, but each and every one is defeated, further making Hercules a hero in the eyes of the citizens. Statues and merchandise are soon rampant with Hercules' face, and Hercules thinks that his fame will allow him to return to Mount Olympus. That's his goal throughout this whole thing. He wants to go home to his parents. He wants to be that hero that just goes home. He wants to, because that's where he feels like he should be in the god pantheon. However, upon visiting the Temple of Zeus again, Zeus explains that Hercules, that fame does not equal heroism. When Hercules asks to know what he can do, Zeus refuses to explain further, which I'm kind of glad that he kept it to himself. It's something you got to figure out for yourself, what makes a hero a hero. And it's sacrifice. And Hercules really hasn't sacrificed a whole lot in this. Everything he's been doing has been for himself. You know, he's doing this for himself. He's doing this for himself. He's doing this for himself. He did one thing for Meg. But realistically, he was thinking to himself, I got to make myself look like a hero. This may do it. Back in Thebes, the conversation has upset Hercules, who wonders if he has what it takes to be a hero. And Phil and him are talking about it. And while in his home, Meg appears and gets Hercules to come with her for an evening rendezvous. Now, there's a fun little thing to see. One, Phil is sitting there and he cleans himself up using lion skin. The skin actually is the costume of Scar. It's the skin that once belonged to Scar from the Lion King in 1994. The statue Hercules hits while skipping stones is the famous Venus de Milo, or Aphrodite of Milos, which can be seen at the Louvre Museum in Paris, France. And if you ever get to go to the Louvre, please don't just spend one day there. You got to spend at least a week and a half. It's fantastic. So they go to this evening rendezvous. However, Meg's intentions are to secretly find Hercules' weakness. But as the night goes on, she kind of begins to find him a little charming. The mood is broken when Phil and Pegasus show up to take Hercules home. During the flight away, Phil ends up getting hit by a tree and falls off of Pegasus. And then we get, and I'm not joking about this, probably my favorite song in Disney animated history, which is I Won't Say I'm Not in Love. At the end of this, this is a great song because I think everybody who's been burned by love in the past has met somebody else and have been reticent to push themselves to actually open themselves to being up for that person. And this song is all about keeping those feelings inside and not making a big deal about them. I love this song because it's all about, I don't want a rebound. I want the real thing. And I'm not going to say it. I'm not going to say it. I am not in love. And at the very end, I love, she says, she won't say it out loud, but she feels it. And the whole song, you get to feel the whole song. This is the hallmark of the movie. It's not the song Go the Distance. Go the Distance is a very generic song. This song, although generic, has a lot of feeling behind it too. And at the end of the song, the muses can be heard singing the tune to Kiss the Girl from The Little Mermaid. So, hey, there's a Little Mermaid reference, another one for you. So, Philoctetes wakes up and he sees Meg talking to Hades. And with their conversation sounding as if Meg has been two-timing Hercules. In truth, Meg refuses to go along with Hades' plan, claiming that Hercules has no weakness, which leads Hades to believe that she is that weakness. Ha, ha, ha!
That's very funny to me. Y'all ain't laughing, though.
Back at Thebes' stadium, Phil tries to convince Hercules of what he saw, but Hercules angrily hits Phil. Phil, hurt by his protege's backlash, gets up and leaves. Once Phil is gone, Hades appears and offers Hercules an ultimatum. If Hercules gives up his powers for 24 hours, that rhymes, Hades will allow Meg to go free, with the provision that the deal will be voided if any harm comes to her. Hercules goes through with the deal, only to have Hades then tell Hercules how Meg was working for him. What a dick. Now drained of his strength, Hercules can only watch as Hades lets loose the Titans that Zeus had imprisoned years later. And on top of those Titans, Hades sends a giant Cyclops to Thebes just to destroy the city, just for giggles. Now, even though Hercules is drained of his strength, he still tries to stop the creature. And he gets the snot beat out of him. Fearing that he'll be killed, Meg and Pegasus find Phil, who they convince to return and help his student. With Phil's help and some ingenuity, Hercules ends up blinding and finishing off the Cyclops. But in the process, Meg is gravely injured. Interestingly enough, her injury causes Hades' deal to expire. Ha ha! And Hercules receives his strength back. With Phil watching over Meg, Hercules and Pegasus fly to Mount Olympus, where the Titans have all but overpowered Zeus and the other gods. Hercules helps turn the tide of the battle and ends up taking care of the Titans, and Hades angrily retreats to the underworld. When Hercules returns to Thebes, Phil reveals that Meg has died. Upset by this, Hercules descends into the underworld to get her back. Hercules makes a deal with Hades that he will take Meg's place if he rescues her from the River of Death. Hades accepts the deal, sure that Hercules will die before he can even get anywhere close to her. And just as it seems that Hercules is going to die, he reaches out to Meg and suddenly begins to glow yellow, having achieved god status by risking his life to save her. Sacrifice. Hercules manages to get Meg out of the River of Death, much to Hades' ranting and protestations, several of which cause Hercules to send him flying into the river where the dead attempt to drown him. Hercules, Pegasus, Phil, and Meg then fly to Mount Olympus where the gods are waiting to welcome Hercules back now that he has become a true hero. However, Hercules chooses to stay on Earth, but still be able to visit his family. The film ends as one of the gods creates a constellation in the sky of Hercules, making Phil swell with pride that he was able to train a legend and a god. But now it's time to figure out whether the awards got it right and whether this movie is worth your time or not. Well, at the Academy Awards, this got one nomination, and it was for Best Original Song. And it wasn't for my favorite song, by the way, which is a bunch of BS, okay? Now, that year, your nominations were Anastasia's Journey to the Past, Con Air's How Do I Live, Goodwill Hunting's Miss Misery, Hercules' Go the Distance, and Titanic's My Heart Will Go On. I think we all know which one won. It was Titanic's My Heart Will Go On. And to be honest with you, it's a fantastic song, and it is still played nonstop, so you got to give it to that one. The awards got it right that time. Now, we go to the Golden Globes, and this time again, Best Original Song goes to My Heart Will Go On Again. And again, you can't deny it. It is one of those songs that comes around once every 10 years that goes, you know what, this is going to sweep every single time that it goes up there. And finally, the other awards, the Saturn Awards, which is the Academy of Sci-Fi, Fantasy, and Horror Films. This is nominated for Best Fantasy Film. It was up against Austin Powers' International Man of Mystery, Batman and Robin, George of the Jungle, Mouse Hunt, and The Lost World Jurassic Park. Austin Powers won. This is the first one. And as good as Hercules is in my eyes, Austin Powers is practically iconic as a comedy. So I'm going to say they got it right that time. It's not going to go to Batman and Robin. That movie sucked. George of the Jungle, everybody's forgotten about. Mouse Hunt, unless you were 5 years old, you didn't get into it. And The Lost World Jurassic Park was a pale comparison to Jurassic Park. So I think they got that one right also. But all right, on to the next segment titled Top 3, Bottom 3. This is where I go over things, three things that I want to highlight in this movie. And then I'm going to go over the three things that are bad, unforgivable, or downright travesties. But let's start with the top three, okay? My number three, James Woods as Hades is so perfect. Now, when we did the Toy Story retrospective, we talked about how the voice casting was fantastic for that. And the voice casting in this movie is pretty good. But what stands out is how good James Woods is. You can tell he's having a ball with this movie. My number two highlight is the Hydra fight. I talked about it earlier and how it's the first time, not the first time, but it's definitely one of the first times that we've seen a CGI and a hand-drawn animated figure on the screen at the same time fighting each other. It does look really, really good. It's pretty seamless, but on a Blu-ray TV, you can kind of pick apart the parts that are a little more smooth than the others. But the Hydra fight is really, really fun to watch. And my number one, I think you've heard me talk about several times now, Meg's I Won't Say I'm In Love song. It is my hallmark of this movie. It's what I look forward to every time I see it. So I'm going to give it to that. Now I go to my bottom three. These are things that you should watch out for, okay? Number three, they really pinned a lot on the song Go the Distance. And although it's another one of those You Can Do It songs, it's a little cheesy and a little generic. But I can't get behind cheesy and generic sometimes. My number two is This Mythology Takes Way Too Many Liberties. Okay, I'm okay with taking one or two, but at the beginning, I listed nine liberties this thing took. That's a whole lot. You could have told this story without leaving or while leaving out all the adultery stuff and whatnot, but it just isn't going to do that. So it decides to Disneyfy it and turn Hades into basically Satan as opposed to just being another god who's in charge of the underworld. The underworld is not hell. It's just a place where the dead go. And finally, my number one, and I've railed against this in a couple movies before, but this movie has way too many montages. One is okay. Two or more becomes a gimmick. This has four or five. It is ridiculous after a while. Now, do I think that this movie holds up by today's standards? I think the music still holds up. I do. And the animation is a unique enough style to not be a part of the time that it came out in. I mean, it's still very good, but some of the jokes are probably not going to be understood by kids today because of the pop culture-ness of them. The IXI, Lady, Please Call IXII. We know 911, but why would a kid be yelling that in a time when there's no phones? So these are things that I think about when you think about today's standards. The sassiness of the characters, the sarcasm of the characters, that still resonates today. But, you know, there's times when you'll probably look at the animation going, oh, I've seen better. And you probably have. So I'm going to say that, yes, this movie holds up by today's standards, but, oh, you know, just by a little bit. It's definitely worth seeing, though. I definitely think this is worth seeing. And luckily, it's on Netflix. It seems like forever it's been on Netflix. Now we get to the hold-up rating. We use a 4-star scale here on the Movie Planet. But if the movie is so bad, it's awesome. So bad, it's awesome. And there are people who don't believe that this actually exists. We give it the Planet Killer. It's a global killer.
Global killer. The end of mankind. Doesn't matter where it hits. Nothing would survive, not even bacteria.
So the question is, does this movie hold up to today's audiences in the animated feature film genre? And so out of 4 stars, I'm going to give this 2.5 stars. Okay, it is a very average movie by today's standards. So 2.5, if you figure a 2 is average, 1 is below average, 0 is just dead awful, it's a planet global killer. This is average. This is a very average movie by today's standards. That being said, an average movie from 1997 is probably still something to pay attention to, because if it has deteriorated in its time to just average, I think you started off with a pretty good movie. So check this out. I think that you'd be very, very happy with this one. Now, if we revisit the list of movies in the animated pantheon, we got number one is Toy Story 3 with a perfect 4. Number two is Toy Story 2 with a perfect 4. Number three was Toy Story with a 3. And number 4 was Fantastic Mr. Fox with a 3. This movie's going to come in at number 5. I'm putting it in right now into the pantheon. Hercules with a 2.5 out of 5. Chances are Hercules may get bumped out at some point, but it's time to get the critics' hats off. Do I love this movie? Do I like this movie? Or none of the above? I will say this. I grew up loving Greek mythology, so that bone of interest has always been there. I love this movie. It's fun. It's funny. The songs are catchy. Even Go the Distance catches on for a while. The montages are, that's a lot of rapid movement. And, you know, a lot of people today love to see things moving really fast on the screen because of our attention deficit disorders that we all have now. So I'm going to say, yeah, I love this movie. I could watch this movie any time of the day. That and Meg is hot. So I'm going to leave it at that. We'll be right back. That's all I got time for today, Movie Planeteers. I hope you've enjoyed the discussion of Hercules. Next week, we will be talking Jaws. So be sure to download or stream us then. The week after that, we will be doing Labyrinth. You can email the Movie Planet using the address movieplanetpodcast@gmail.com. Don't forget to pass the word on to your friends about the show. Subscribe on iTunes and help the show get on its feet with a 4 or 5 star review. Tweet with any questions, comments, theories, and I'll try to fit them into the show next time we're on the air. Send those tweets to @MoviePlanetPod and like us on Facebook and Instagram using the links in the show notes. Special thanks to Twisterium and SoundJay Music for providing our intro music. Thanks for listening to the Movie Planet Podcast, and happy movie watching.